Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Greenhouse. I am Anna Snow.
And I'm Preston Lal. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have a great show ahead.
Yes. Tune in for all things planet Earth. Or I guess stay tuned in, because if you're just tuned in, you're listening.
Yeah. Yep. Coming up, we're going to talk about coral bleaching, you know, the effect it has, you know, as tourism season is, you know, kind of kicking in when everyone, you know, goes to Australia. That's the one big thing that
Australia,
I think of.
Florida.
You know, all those tropical areas.
Yes. Lots of places in the Caribbean.
That's coming up. We're going to talk about, you know, ways to prevent coral bleaching and, you know, an interesting fact that Anna found about tourism in corals.
Yes.
You want to stick around for that.
Yes. But you don't want to miss it.
But first, a major climate summit is going on right now in Egypt. It's in El Shaki, Egypt. We are working on the pronunciation of that. Mm-hmm. But it's called the COP27. It's a series of meetings the UN hosts every year to see what can be done about the changing climate, as is indicated by the number. 27 is the number of times met. Last year was COP26, where we're going to talk about that and how the promises made, the promises not kept. I think, as you know, in politics and in bureaucracy, these are meetings that, like, everyone says we're going to do something about it, and then, you know, nothing really...
I think a lot of times it's for a show. It's to look good. Sometimes, you know, for politicians to be like, look, I went to this summit and I promised this and this and this and this. But then, okay, you promised it, but did you do it, you know?
Exactly. And I think you see in a lot of, like, these big diplomatic kind of arenas, a lot of people throw money at their problems or create, like, you know, teams and, you know, meeting groups that are specifically trying to combat a problem, which acknowledges the problem, but it doesn't, like, do anything to solve it. So, like, you know, at the COP26 summit, I'm just going to read you some of the things that, you know, happened. $500 million were allocated to protect tropical rainforests. We have not heard, you know, a lot from that since it happened. Spain and Senegal, two countries, created a committee called the International Drought Resilience Alliance. It was not immediately available what they have done so far. And then the U.S. climate envoy, John Kerry, created something called a carbon credit tax initiative that would raise money to help other countries, you know, kind of decarbonize. And, you know, from what we saw, it was a lot of money. It was in the billions that the U.S. would pledge to help by 2024.
And, like, those amounts of money sound great. $500 million to protect the rainforest sounds great. But where, like, you can say we're going to donate this to the rainforest, but you can't, like, hand trees money. So it's like, who is actually seeing this money and what are they doing with it, if anyone is seeing it at all? You know what I mean? Like, what organizations are you supporting? That's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And
I need more facts.
I found the number. It's $11.4 billion that the U.S. would allocate to 2024 to help other countries decarbonize. You know, which is
interesting.
What about
the United States decarbonizing?
That's another thing that, you know, people talk about. And, you know, President Biden has been doing his part in helping the environment by allocating more money. You know, things like the Inflation Reduction Act, which, you know, tried to, like, make green solutions, which were creative and monumental because we haven't seen them before. But it seems like a lot of these ideas start with throwing money and hoping something, which I guess is good. They're willing to throw money into these solutions, and we know money's hard to come by.
And if that money goes to the right people, into the hands of the right organization, you know, it could do a lot of good. But I just feel like we never actually see where that money goes. If it's, like I'm saying, if it's going anywhere at all, you know what I mean? Like, we hear about it. You hear Biden's going to donate this much money to this this climate initiative or whatever. And then I never hear about it again. I don't know if the news just doesn't talk about it again.
I mean, it's a combination of both, but really, does you need to find an organization willing to spend the time to donate the money. You know, the money has to go somewhere. So we'll see how that happens. You know, another thing that happened at the COP26 summit, it was formally agreed upon that a resolution needed to be reached to reduce the temperature by 1.5 degrees, which is Celsius. That formal agreements are always great. What comes out of it? I don't know.
Yeah, we can agree on anything, and it's a formal declaration. Yeah.
The plan, that plan called for every country to submit like an individual plan you know, how to do this. And 28 countries submitted one, which is, you know, great. 28 countries, until we find out that 193 members are in the United Nations. So, you know.
Do you know any of the countries that did submit them?
I don't know the countries that did submit them, but I would think, like, you know, maybe the bigger ones would submit.
It would just be interesting to see. And if we don't have that, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think, like, I feel like we're on year 27 of this, and, like, what has been done?
The biggest, you know, kind of thing that I could find was in COP21, which was in 2015.
Yeah.
Currently 2022. 2015, where they signed the Paris Climate Accords.
Yes, I remember that.
That was a, you know, big deal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nothing really has come out since then, which is really interesting.
Okay. Well,
and, you know, I saw something from New York Times I can't find right now, but it was like the U.S. was one country that, like, refused to agree to a framework for something with the climate. And I don't know if it was a money thing, because, you know, the U.S. what is throwing money right now. So it was something that I'm going to try to find by the end of the show.
Aren't we, like, way in debt? That's not my
you're correct on
area
that.
Of expertise.
We
politics
are in debt. Yeah. Not... We're in the trillions in debt.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's just do that more.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see this quote in here you have in the doc. We are on a highway to hell with our foot still on the accelerator. Or climate hell. With our foot still on the accelerator, from the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Gutierrez. Yeah.
That's a good quote to, like, slap on, like, a headline, you know.
Yeah. That's how we opened the summit.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it set the expectations very high and then, you know, decrease. I found what I was talking about with the money. This is from the New York Times news quiz. So that's the only way I found
the
out about it.
News quiz?
At the COP27 climate summit in Egypt, several countries pledged new financial help to help poorer nations for damage caused by climate change.
Oh,
so not to help, you know, people suffering from, you know, the effects of maybe, like, flooding and stuff like that. Which country did not agree to do so? The answers were Austria, Germany, Ireland, Scotland, and the U.S.
It's the U.S., isn't
it? The U.S. would be the correct answer. And 60% of people responded correctly on that. So, I mean, a lot of people understand. I mean, 60% is a low number, but a lot of people, assumed that the U.S. probably wouldn't give money for that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, yeah. And then, you know, you talked about the quote. They wanted to find a way to, like, create clean energy.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S., according to our research, spends about $2.6 billion on fossil fuel projects, you know, those what cause the biggest cause of pollution, really.
Yes.
And only $358 million on renewable programs.
Man, that number makes me sad.
Yeah, it's not great. Here's something from, it's called energymonitor.ai.
Mm-hmm.
And this is quoting directly from their article. We had to quote directly from articles because we couldn't figure out what was going on.
Yeah, so maybe you'll hear the quote and you'll know what's going on.
Yeah, or maybe you won't. Here it is. Another major achievement at COP26 was an agreement between 39 countries and financial institutions to end direct international public financing for fossil fuels by the end of 2022 and fully prioritize public finance for the clean energy transition. So I think what that means is that U.S., like, countries are going to stop funding fossil fuel plants.
Okay.
But, you know, with the stat that we just gave, about $2.6 billion, that's a lot.
Also, we are very nearing the end of 2022. I would like to see results from that. Because when you have, like, a set by the end of 2022 or 2024, whatever, when that time gets there, it's like, where are the results? And we're about halfway through November, so there should be some type of results by now. You got a month and a half.
Yeah.
You know what?
Maybe got pushed back.
Maybe, yeah.
Lastly, President Biden was there. He, interesting stuff, actually. He was the only, like, major leader from one of the big polluting countries to attend, which we found kind of interesting. Vladimir Putin of Russia, Xi Jinping of China, and Narendra Modi of India, all three of them, you know, major polluters, none of them attended.
Wow.
Biden was the only one who was there. in his defense, he was briefly there on a layover because he's on another international trip, and he just popped by.
He's like, hey, just gonna say hi for a second.
And here's another quote that we couldn't do. We have a history on this show of quoting President Biden and trying to figure out what it is.
What he means, yep.
So here it is. Countries that are in a position to help should be supporting developing countries so they can make a decisive climate decisions, facilitating their energy transitions, and building a path through prosperity compatible with our climate imperative. Impressive use of imperative.
Yeah.
So I think what he was trying to say there is, you know, the U.S. needs to give money to, you know, poorer nations to kind of help them combat the effects of climate change, which is quite contradictory from what we just talked about in the New York Times, where the U.S. was one of the few countries that did not ratify, you know, a plan to help to give money.
Which, it makes no sense. Like, then why say that? Why? Exactly. When we have evidence that you're not doing that, why say that? You know, like, it just makes you look bad, I feel
exactly.
like.
And, you know, Biden's tried to do his thing. I believe it was, he's spending $370 million within the U.S. in efforts, you know, make the U.S. more green. And, you know, the EPA is trying to, quote, aggressively regulate methane gas.
Okay.
I'm not sure what they're trying to do specifically, but the end goal, and that, you know, that's something interesting too.
They're going to tell the cows, stop making methane, please.
People always like to say the end goal without saying how they're going to get there.
Yeah. That's one thing that I see a lot with all of these summits and all of these things, like, oh, they're going to make a plan, they're going to do something. And then they have goals, but if you have no way to achieve those goals, they mean nothing. They're like nothing. Yeah.
So this end goal would limit methane by 36 million tons.
Okay.
For context, according to the International Energy Agency, there are 135 billion tons of methane that were emitted in 2021.
Okay.
And the aggressive regulation of methane gas, that's supposed to be hit by 2035.
Okay.
So there's a long time.
That's a while.
And
but hopefully we'll still all be around in 2035.
Maybe we'll be down to 100 if that,
maybe,
if that math works out. And you also saw a lot of contradictory stuff. The initiative, the U.S. is reaffirming a stance on their hope to increase Egyptian gas exports. So, you know, fossil fuels, they want to increase that in the hope that it will limit one-fifth of Egypt's gas emissions. I don't know what that means.
I would kind of maybe see where it was coming from if they were increasing their exports from Egypt, because that would mean decreasing gas that comes from here. So then I'm like, okay, well, they're,
it's still creating the same amount of...
But then you're just helping one country and not another. But how is that going to decrease Egypt's gas if we're taking more
away from,
Egypt?
Oh, maybe is that less... Egypt gas will be used in Egypt, which makes the overall Egypt, like,
so gas Egypt present. Will be using less, but globally that gas will still be used somewhere else. It's like the same thing as, like, because the U.S. does import most of its gas because there's been a lot of controversy, and we've talked about pipelines on here too, and how those are harmful to the environment and harmful often to Native American communities, because that's the land they're trying to rip
cut
up and
through.
Put pipelines in and stuff. But I don't know. So, like you said, contradictory stuff. There's a lot of it. You know, this stats about Egypt, Biden's quote versus what the U.S. actually voted for. It's confusing.
It's very confusing. And, you know, this summit has 4 days left. It ends November 18th. Mm-hmm. It's been going on since November 6th.
Okay.
So this is a long summit. Let's see if they get anything done.
We'll see.
And we will, you know, keep tabs on it.
Yes.
But... you know, maybe promise. We'll talk about COP28 next year.
Yes.
Coming up, we're going to talk about coral bleaching in tropical areas from Anna's home of Florida all the way down to Australia. What scientists are doing and how the coral you see when you're on a tour is different from what's actually in the ocean.
Yes.
Stick around. You're listening to The Greenhouse on Blaze Radio. Welcome back to The Greenhouse. I'm Pratham Vall.
And I'm Anna Snow. And now we're about to talk about coral bleaching, which is a topic I've probably been annoying Pratham to talk about for a long time.
We've been planning about this since, you know, July.
Since the summer. I watched a documentary over the summer, and it was called Puff, The Wonder of the Reef. And it was about a little fish, a little baby fish, and about his life. But one of the things is when he was living in the reef, it was all bleached, and he was sad about that. They also talked about coral bleaching on an episode of Octonauts, which I am not embarrassed or ashamed to say. I like that show.
Octonauts was pretty good.
It is, yes. It's a nice little comfort show when I just need something.
And it's a documentary style. They use real footage.
They do at the end of the movie, or not movie, at the end of each episode.
Mission Report.
Yes, at the Mission Report, they use real footage. But it also has good little information. Anyways, so we're talking about coral reefs, and just a little background on reefs. About 25% of species that live in reefs rely specifically on the coral for protection, food, and shelter, you know, from the bigger animals that are also living in those reefs. And coral bleaching happens often when water temperatures rise, which causes the coral to release zooxanthellae, maybe.
Wow.
Big scientific word that I don't have to say because I've only ever read it. So that is an algae that lives within the tissue of the coral. It is also what gives the coral its bright, fun colors.
Yeah, so then when the temperature is released, that color kind of like.
Mm-hmm. So when coral gets. So coral bleaching is a stress response that happens naturally in coral. And sometimes one little coral might be stressed about something. I don't know. Yeah. Coral has anxiety, apparently. it could be caused by cold water. It could be caused by pollution. But the major cause is warm water when the temperatures are too high for the coral. And that causes what is called mass bleaching, which is a big problem. In 2005, the U.S. lost half of its coral in the Caribbean in 1 year due to a mass bleaching event. The warm waters centered from the northern Antilles near the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico expanded southward. And so satellite data is how they do most of this coral analysis. Bleaching analysis and stuff, because you can visually see the coral that's all white and then the fun colors. Satellite comparison from the previous 20 years confirmed that thermal stress from 2005 was greater than the previous 20 years combined.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Well, you know, you said something interesting early on that cold water can also cause mm-hmm. coral bleaching, which is something that I, you know, kind of just understood for the first time, because my solution would be, oh, you know what, the water's getting warmer, corals are losing their colors, mm-hmm. find a way to make the water cooler and it's fine.
Yeah.
Apparently it's not fine. Big changes is what causes it. So I think it's all about reframing.
Like I said, it is a natural stress response. So there's never going to be a way to get rid of coral bleaching as a thing. Like, it is just the same way that, you know, humans might have like a fight or flight response, or, you know, different, every species has stress responses. But it's, that's why the term mass bleaching is like the problem. So when the coral is bleached, it is not actually dead yet, but it does make it much more susceptible to lots of diseases and things like that. And also, the algae that the coral is expelling, the coral relies on for food and oxygen. So if they're not getting food and oxygen just because the bleaching itself didn't kill it, it is going to eventually die.
Yeah, and I think a word, you know, corals have a huge mm-hmm. kind of effect on the ecosystem. They're not just there to look nice.
Yes.
I think the term that, you know, scientists like to use is the word symbiotic.
Yes. Which you said. So they have a symbiotic relationship with this algae. And the coral aren't the only ones that rely on that algae. You know, lots of little fish will come in and eat it, you know.
Just like Nemo,
exactly. Nemo was living in the Great Barrier Reef. And look how pretty it was. And that movie was made
2004,
2003 or 4, something like that, you know. Before, not necessarily before this was happening, but, you know, certainly before it was as bad as it is now.
Yeah.
So a lot of the studies on coral bleaching come out of Australia, because obviously the Great Barrier Reef
is the biggest case study.
It is the biggest. So in Australia, scientists surveyed 1,036 different reefs in the area, and 60% of them had moderate to severe bleaching.
Wow.
Excuse me. Doing a lot of talking.
Yeah.
But, interestingly enough, in Australia, most tourism areas have no negligible or very moderate low levels of bleaching. And this is literally copy-pasted from the research I was reading. High-standard tourism operations regularly contribute to the Eye on the Reef system that provides the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority with excellent real-time awareness of reef health at high-value tourism sites. First of all, I read through this study. I tried to Google it. I could not find what they are doing that prevents these tourism areas from being
like looking
bleached
nice. Yeah.
To keeping them pretty. But clearly, if they are doing that, I don't understand why they would not be doing that to protect as much of the coral reef as they possibly can, because the little animals don't care whether it's a tourist area or not. They need the coral for their protection and food and shelter. And the coral itself is also a key species.
Exactly. And, you know, you talk, it's interesting that, you know, tourists and tourist agencies, government boards are able to do something, you know, for the tourists, but they aren't willing or able to do it for other spots. And, you know, clearly they are able if they're able to do something.
I don't know.
But what's interesting, I saw a study from Australian Geographic. They claim that coral reefs are actually making a comeback in the Great Barrier Reef. It says, like, coral cover has bounced back about two-thirds of the Great Barrier Reef. Apparently, the Great Barrier Reef is, like, cut into, like, different sections.
Yes.
So apparently the north and central sections have the highest level of cover coming back over a 36-year period from when they measured it. Scientists are warning that, you know, just because it's back doesn't mean it's going to stay back. You know, you gotta, like, you know, still prevent your pollution and, like, monitor the oceans carefully. The south section, which is, hasn't had a great comeback, a big reason they're saying is due to the like a species of starfish coming and taking over. So I think that's just a helpful reminder that while human treatment of coral reef has not been the greatest due to the pollution and other factors we mentioned, coral reefs are also like a natural kind of species in the ocean. And over time, species adapt and see an increase and decrease.
I would ask how those starfish got there, because if they are an invasive species, which is what it sounds like they are, although I did not read the study, you did. I would wonder how they ended up there, because oftentimes invasive species get there because of humans, and I'm not saying that that's 100% what happened. Maybe it's not. And sometimes it's unintentional. Sometimes they're, like, on the bottoms of ships and things, and that humans don't realize they're bringing them. Or sometimes humans have them in aquariums and stuff and then release them, and it's like, oh.
Yeah.
You know?
It seems like the reason this got better is because they were just given a little bit of time.
Okay.
The corals, the last, like, mass bleaching event was in 2020 when all these waters were warm. And then, you know, with COVID, people may not have been going out as much. Gave, like, environment COVID, time to recover.
It's so interesting. Obviously, COVID was awful, and we, you know, humans don't want to live through a pandemic, and we're still kind of in it, you know?
It could be coming back.
That's
doctors are saying it could be coming back.
But the environmental stuff, like things coming back, you know, it was really
interesting. Animals on land were getting so much better with like the lack of ozone, I think. And then it also seems like the Great Australian Reef Area, I guess they have a lot of cyclones in the area, which, like, you know, cause damage in the water, you know, mix up the currents and everything. They haven't had those since 2016 and 2017. So I get, they were given time. So I think the good news that shows is that, you know, coral is able to recover.
Hopefully this also has something to do with, like, the increase of, like, just awareness about it, so people know about it, you know? And because if people know about it and care about something, then stuff can start getting done. And hopping over to Florida for a second, a little closer to here than Australia, and also where I'm from. Florida's Reef Track is the largest barrier reef in the United States.
Wow.
And it runs from Port St. Lucie, which is just north of where I am from, all the way down to Key West. And Florida records show that coral bleaching has unfortunately been increasing in frequency since the early 80s. This year, this article was from October 15th, so just about 3 weeks ago. Florida reefs are experiencing the first widespread mass bleaching event in 7 years, according to Derek Manzello, who is the coordinator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Coral Reef Watch. And this is a confirmed widespread bleaching event taking place from Dry Tortugas, which is in the Florida Keys, all the way up to Martin County, which is actually where I am from. And this is at least the eighth mass bleaching event we have had since 1987. So
I wonder what the way, you know, to prevent it is.
And so coral reefs are essential not only to the little fishies that live there, but also to humans, because coral reefs are one of the number one protections against hurricanes. A healthy reef can absorb much of the energy from offshore waves, making it a first line of defense against storming and floods. So
just like mangroves that we talked about
before, and we'll talk about in the
future. So interesting stuff. You know, we talked about, you know, how the benefits of coral, the interesting, you know, dichotomy between tourist areas and, like, the natural area, and the impact it has on the ecosystem.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us on, you know, our second or third to last episode of The Greenhouse. We're going to be back next week for Thanksgiving week. So, you know, just be careful about the animals you eat.
Of course.
I'm Pratham Dalal.
And I'm Anna Snow. And thank you so much for joining us and listening to all things Planet Earth.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye.